Many of us are involved as leaders and board members of new or emerging nonprofits. Whether working with the homeless, the environment, animals, children, or one of the many, many types of charitable organizations, every new leader wonders, are we doing this right? Enter Renee McGivern and Nonprofit Spark. Each week, Renee and her guests walk through an area of nonprofit work in clear, concise, and practical themed shows. Whether it's about best practices, developing and keeping a volunteer force, fundraising, effective governance, or hiring staff, to name but a few, you can boost your nonprofit know-how and confidence. Renee and Nonprofit Spark have arrived.
Welcome to Nonprofit Spark, a show for leaders and board members of new and emerging nonprofits. I'm pleased to have Sherry Truler of Red Apple Auctions back on the show this week. She is a charity auction educator and onstage auctioneer who has worked with nonprofits on more than 300 events. She also is a certified meeting planner, and she's one of my regulars because Sherry offers tips and tricks that can really make a difference for those of you who plan auctions. We want you to use your time well and enjoy it, rather than pull your hair out and drive your family and the staff crazy. This week, we begin at the beginning with five steps to a great fundraising auction. Most of us have attended fundraising auctions, and some of us have even planned them. And often we imitate what other organizations have done. But what if that auction we're imitating really wasn't very well planned? And what if it could have been 10 times better? What if we started with a fresh point of view about auctions with solid information in hand about five steps we must take to be successful? I encourage you to check out Sherry's book, What Sold Swell in 2012, so you can get some great ideas for auction items, and the link is right there on the show description on our webpage. You'll find other resources on her site as well. This back-to-basics look at fundraising auctions will help new fundraisers, but also more experienced volunteers who never really were grounded in solid auction best practices. Enjoy.
Welcome back to Nonprofit Spark, Sherry.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for reaching out.
Sherry, I've enjoyed my conversations with you, and in the past we've sort of landed in the middle of silent and live auctions and talked about how people can tweak what they've been doing for a while and how to improve all that. And it occurred to me to talk to you this week about starting from scratch and starting something from the very beginning. How do you want to go about this, and what do you want to talk about today?
Well, I think it's a great subject, and I kid you not, literally, just before I jumped on the interview here with you, I was speaking with a woman who is down in Richmond, Virginia, and she's getting ready to run her very first ever school auction. They've never done this before or anything. So whenever you're getting started with something like this, it helps if you start breaking it down into a process or into steps. So what I did to help all of the listeners here today is I broke this down into kind of five steps. And I'd love to say it's five easy steps, but I don't know if that would be true because auctions do take a lot of work. Very profitable. They're very profitable when done properly, but they take a lot of work. So there's always a lot of steps underneath each of these, but at least it's kind of five simple steps to get started so that you have a sense of what's going to be involved.
All right. You know, Sherry, even if somebody's had one for a while, I'd like them to think about and actually come back and begin at the beginning again. Bring a sense of wonder and newness to their conversations about their fundraisers and auctions. So it's time to start something new. So what would you like to say for the first step that people should be looking at?
Well, what I'm going to do, how about if I give all five steps and then we kind of go into the meat of each one, but at least up front, that way if people are taking notes, they can kind of block off some space on their paper. Just getting started, I'm going to say the first step is to get help. The second step is to get some structure. The third step is to get your items. The fourth step is to get an audience. And the final fifth step is to get the money. So with regards to that, we're going to dive in deep here, or at least deeper on each one of these. And so that first one is about getting help, because auctions can't be done alone. You will slit your wrists 2 months into it if you're trying to do something by yourself. So this is where you're going to be reaching out. It may be to your friends. It may be to other people who have a common interest, if it's a nonprofit or if it's a school, maybe it's other parents. But the point here is that you've got to get some help, people who are going to, in one way, form or fashion, help you throw on this fun fundraiser.
Yes,
and
fun.
It is fun.
Yeah.
Well, it's fun, and it's more fun when you're doing it with people you like, which is part of why I say friends, because yeah. I've been in many committee meetings, Renee, where I'm sitting there, and I like to talk to each member and say, well, why are you here? What brought you here today? And more often than not, particularly at nonprofit events, someone will say, well, I'm a friend of Jennifer's, and Jennifer asked me.
Okay.
You know? They may not have any interest in all for the group that's raising the money, but because their friends ask them to help, they're willing to help. So with regards to this, it's going to depend on the scale of event that you have, but I would say that if you can get 3 to 10 committed people, now this is like the pre-planning, this is not on site, but 3 to 10 people who are kind of helping you in different areas, that's a great core group of people.
Well, what I like about that is, first of all, when we're engaging more people in something we're up to on behalf, in this case for my audience, on behalf of a charity, even if your friend didn't know about the charity, they do now. They will now.
Yes.
And they do start feeling invested in what the charity is up to, and then they participate in the event, and then they meet staff, and they meet recipients, and suddenly you're really spreading the word about the organization.
Well, and to your point earlier, I know you're a big one for, you know, try to change some things, see what happens. When you bring new blood in, you can get some fresh ideas. So that is helpful too. And some enthusiasm, because it's not uncommon, particularly if you're, you know, if this is your job and you've been doing it for 10 years, you are probably sick of it. You're kind of like, oh my gosh, now I have to do it. So it helps to keep your energy up. I can't stress this enough. You know, your energy will help sell things. Your enthusiasm will help sell things. Whether you know anything about which the territory you're delving into or not, if you're enthusiastic about it, it will help. So when you're using that language even, that might be another tip I could share with your listeners here, is that, you know, would you like to come play with me? We're having some fun over here with this auction committee. We're planning this fun fundraiser. Would you like to come play too? Because playful language will help bring some creativity and enthusiasm into it as well.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the first thing, is getting some help here. It is its own step, because if you're gonna go down in a firestorm, which is exactly what you'll do if you're trying to do this by yourself, there's just too much involved in an auction to try and pull it off completely by yourself.
It becomes something that should be enjoyable and, I don't know, a delight for people participating and those who visit the event. And it shouldn't be something that is torturous, exhausting. Or if you are exhausted, it's like the exhaustion that comes from being satisfied with having done something well with a bunch of people.
Right. Like at the end of the marathon, you'd feel so great that you just finished, a marathon. And that's kind of how it would be at the end of the auction, because it is a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Yeah, boy, is that the truth. Okay, go ahead. Next.
All right. So I would say number two here is you're going to need to get some structure around what's going to happen. And to that end, there's a bunch of subpoints underneath this. So I'll just throw some out and provide some tools for you as well as you go along. Now that you've got some help here, you've got some people, one of the things that you're going to start getting some structure around are committees. So what sorts of committees are you going to need? Now, this can vary wildly depending on the type of event that you're doing, you know, as far as it's whether it's a 10-year event or it's a first-year event. But some of the typical committees that you're going to have at an auction, and there's different names to these, but hopefully I'll describe it. One might be that you're going to need someone who's in charge of decor would be the easiest to fill. Procurement would probably be the most difficult to fulfill. Procurement meaning someone who's going to be responsible for overseeing the committee to get items, not that that person is the only one getting items. But decor, procurement, check-in and check-out, otherwise known as registration and cashiering, the same thing. Another committee that would be core might be with regards to sponsorship if you're moving in that direction. It could be something in charge of getting the butts in the seats, if you will, getting people there. But
promotion.
We'll talk more about that, getting audience tactics in step four. But you do want to have someone in charge of it. So committees, forms, donation forms. If you're going to be reimbursing people for funds they would be spending on a loan, you need reimbursement forms, those sorts of things. Your venue would be an example of getting some structure. Determining if you're going to have a sit-down event versus food stations would be getting some structure. You'd figure that out with your committees.
So when you talk about step one and step two, is there an assumption early on that who's ever organizing this knows it's going to be an event like X?
I think that most of them will, but like in the case of this woman I just got off the phone with, that was still up for grabs.
Okay.
They hadn't determined yet if it was going to be a sit-down dinner or food stations, for instance.
Yeah.
Now, if you're walking into an event, maybe you've never planned an auction before, but you just got a new job at the zoo, mm-hmm. and the zoo has Zoofari every year, and it's already kind of set up in a certain way, that's going to be a little bit different because it's you're already going in with a kind of a structure.
Yeah.
But It will vary by group. One thing I will say, though, that people get hung up the most on in this step, and if you're a – well, I shouldn't even say if you're a first-time event. Sometimes people are 5 years in and they're still struggling with this, but it's checkout training. They just don't quite get checkout. So I was going to give people a free resource that they could use on my website to download. I think it's like a 50-minute interview that I did with someone, and we walk through the steps of a manual checkout process. So – if I can provide that web link if you'd like, Renee, and then they can go there to get that. Okay, it's my website is redappleauctions.com. Then you're going to do a /free-resources/auction-checkout-training. And checkout has a dash between the check and the out, too. So
you know that checkout process is critically important, and it often is the very last thing they think about. But you can't ignore it. There's nothing worse than making a bid. You get the bid, and you're standing 40 people deep waiting to check out. It's very, very frustrating for people
yeah.
who come. They talk about it. And they're at work the next day. Yeah, how was that auction? Well, it was great, except, my gosh, we had to stand there for 45 minutes before they'd take our money. It's the most detailed part of this whole doggone thing,
mm-hmm.
and so it's not exactly a fun thing to deal with and talk about. But when it works, it's absolutely masterful. It's for me, having attended many, it's thrilling to see someone who has a smooth checkout process that works just seamlessly.
Well, and those are great points, which is why when you're thinking about who's going to be helping you on step one, one of the people that you're going to want to find is someone who's sort of anal. They are
yes.
detail-oriented. They like processes. Think of the accountant or something like that. Someone who has to follow processes and there's rules. That's the person who's very good at the checkout process, because this is a person, it's less important that they're a sales personality and super outgoing. They need to be somebody who can sit down and think about things and then put together a process that works. And the training that I gave you will certainly get you started on that, but that's the kind of personality that you want to have for that. Because if you've, they will actually relish the role, because it's just a matter of step one, step two, step three, step four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the one way they could make a difference, and yet they wouldn't necessarily want to be somebody out there asking for contributions to the auction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be like,
exactly.
Oh, no, I'd rather die than go ask some people for something. So this is a great role. Another reason why you'd have a variety of people with a variety of talents.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So very good. Okay, I get that part about structure. Say more about sponsorship.
Okay. Yes. So sponsorships, and I'll be up front here. If I'm working with a group in when I like to think about these auctions, I think that there's three levels, and I equate it kind of to a business. There's your startup auctions, which are year one. Then you've got your small business auctions, and then you've got your mega businesses, right? It's just like in the business world. You've got your Walmarts, and then you've got the guy down the street who just opened up a kebab place in the downtown area.
Yes.
So between those two, if you're just a startup auction, don't even worry about sponsorships, because quite frankly, that is an entity unto itself.
Yes.
If you go out, get some nice items, put together a little event, sell those items, you're going to make money. And once you kind of get to these, you know, a mid-sized company or a large company, then you can really put a sponsorship program in place and have something to go talk about and feel comfortable with it. So sponsorship is certainly a great way to raise money, but it does require some thought about what you're going to offer to these people. It requires people who are going to be dedicated to going out. You're going to have to put some thought into whether you should ask someone for a sponsorship or for an item or both.
Yes.
So it adds a little complexity to it.
Yes, it, I'm glad you brought that up because really people need to be honest that we are a startup, and where they can get in trouble is if they go and try to imitate the event that the museum, you know, in town does, and they've been doing it for 25 years, and they've been around for 150 years, and it's not the same at all. You cannot take on that same level of burden, not unless you want to be so burned out and fried. A lot of angry people, you know, committee members who dread going to meetings. You know, so I like that. If you're a startup, start really at the leanest point. And concentrate on doing the very basics very, very well.
It could be, you know, if I'm a really small nonprofit and maybe we've got one event already that we're doing and you can kind of see is where you could put an auction into that event. My first advice would be go with a live auction. Don't go with a silent because it's going to be easier for you and you'll make more money, right? So start there. And incorporate that into your existing event. And if you're starting from the ground up and an auction is going to be a predominant part of that, well, okay, you definitely want a live. Maybe you can think about expanding that to a silent auction and maybe a raffle or two. But you can kind of take it from there to make a signature event that's really built around an auction.
Yes.
And then as that grows, absolutely, get a sponsorship involvement. Because the biggest events I do, the $2 million events, whether it's the one up in New York or the one down in Miami I do, those absolutely make most of their money from sponsorship. But they didn't start there.
Okay, good. Well, you're listening to Nonprofit Spark. I'm your host, Renee McGivern, and I'm speaking with Sherry Truler. She is president of Red Apple Auctions. She is a charity auction educator and onstage auctioneer who has worked with nonprofits on more than 300 events. She also is a certified meeting planner. All right, let's keep going with step number three.
Step number three, as a reminder, is get the items, get the stuff. What are you going to sell, right? So it seems like regardless of the groups that I talk to, this is always an area that floats to the top, is that people are looking for assistance in items. They want to know what's trending well. They want to know what they should get. You know, if we're sitting down in a group of people and they're being honest sometimes with new volunteers, they don't even know how to ask or when to ask or anything like that. So I'm going to give you another free resource on my website that you can use to start the discussion in your next procurement meeting. And every year I pull this together. Renee and I were talking about this before we started the show here today. And every year I change it and I roll it out in January. It's an auction item guide, and it includes the top 100 items that I sold for over their estimated value in the auctions I worked last year around the country. So these items might be worth $20, or they might be worth, I think the highest valued item in the guide is like $16,000, but they all sold for well above their value. So you can get that. It's called What Sold Swell in 2012, and it's totally free. It's if you go to redappleauctions.com, it'll be a video up there. It'll hit you in the face. Just, you know, you can listen to the video, fill in your name and email, and it's auto-emailed out to you.
You know,
so that's a good start.
Here's the funny thing to be thinking about, too, in terms of if you're a startup and that kind of thing, is the, you know, carrying things in and out of the auction. And when something doesn't sell, what are you going to do with it? And if you're a very small organization, do you have room? Are you going to put it in a back room somewhere? Are you going to put it back where your files are? Or what are you going to do with some of those items?
Right, because I have been in some pretty darn small nonprofits. In fact, the one I was in the other day, I found out the executive director usually works from her house. You know, it's just really like it's like an entry area and then a back office and then a side area that has coffee and a copier in it. But, I mean, it's small. So you're right. You know, where are they going to put that kind of stuff? If
next thing you know, she's got half her garage devoted to items And
not
and then you bring some of them back the following year, and they still don't sell. Now what do you do?
Oh, no. Well, so getting items, you know, with regards to that, when like I said, that guide will be a great point for discussion, and a number of those things in there, you know, were valued at zero or $20. You know, it was more about the experience and who you were doing it with. And so you can think about that with your own organization is, gosh, well, who do we have here? Like one of my nonprofits is it's more of a national organization. And so this was their first ever live auction. And they said, well, you know, our executive director is pretty popular, but you know, his time is kind of expensive too, if you will, because he's got a lot to do. So, but what we're going to do is, since he is pretty popular with all of our members here, we're going to offer off the opportunity for him to come out to your location and do a, you know, dinner or meet donors or run an event or whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that, you know, technically his time is valuable, but there isn't really a hard cost on that per se. It's
right.
Something that they came up with in their own. So, you know, if you're part of the, I don't know, ALS or Alzheimer's or, you know, some of these larger groups, that would be something that would be a direct comparison. And if not, what is it within your own nonprofit there that who's got special skills? You know, it could be that the development director has a real interest in herbs. I sold a package on herbs last year where you got to go in and work with a woman and learn about different herbal concoctions and, you know, how to improve your health with herbs. That could be something that could become an auction item.
Yes. Well, you know, I like that. It's really look at the people around you as your initial resource, and it could be a donation of their time or knowledge, not just an item. And, you know, Sherry, on the live auction thing, let me ask you this. How many items are typically auctioned off in a live auction?
Right.
Is it 10 or is it?
That's a great question, and it's a common question. And it comes down to two questions that I like to ask the nonprofit. The first question is, how much money do you want to raise? Because that will determine how many items we sell. The second question is, how much time do I have? Because if I have 90 minutes to sell, I can generally raise a lot more money than if I have 15 minutes.
Oh, good point.
So it does come back to that. And if the goal is really, we have got to hit $30,000 in the live auction, I mean, we have got to hit 30, then we start looking at items and how many it's going to take. And if it takes 90 minutes to get to 30, that's what it takes. But if it's, you know, it's a larger event and maybe we're selling two items for $15,000 each, well, that's 15 minutes tops.
Yes, right.
So,
you know, I was at one not too long ago, and they made the mistake of they had a huge silent auction part of it, and then they had people sit down for dinner, and then they did a live auction. But it was after their treasurer, the nonprofit treasurer, got up and gave a fiscal report that went on for 30 minutes.
I can't imagine.
And I thought to myself, oh, what a waste. You could have cut the guy down to 10 minutes. Evidently, they felt that's important that he give that report. And give 20 more minutes to the live auction, you could have done another two or three items. Oh, that was a real missed opportunity.
The sad thing about that, I would say, unless the entire reason that people were coming together for that event was to hear the financial report, my guess is that the goal of that event was to make money, because why else do they have an auction? So why not do the business first? And the business is to get the money. So you take care of business before you have pleasure. And not to say that pleasure is listening to a financial report, because I would have arguments against that. But the point is you, if the point is the fundraiser, you got to get the money. That's
The program, wrap the program around the fundraising. It's the primary reason you're there.
Yes.
I hear what you're saying. Very good.
Yeah. So anyway, items. Yeah, what sold well in 2012? That's a good start to kind of get you focused on what sorts of things are popular around the world. Oh, another one that was really popular the last couple of years is beekeeping. Here's another totally free thing. You know, beekeeping. They found some beekeepers, went up there and said, hey, can we get a behind-the-scenes tour of beekeeping? You know, you get to smoke the bees. You get to check on the queen. You get to, if it's during the honey gathering time, you get to, you know, help gather the honey. Those are kind of cool experiences, again, that, you know, I don't, you're not going to probably sell that for $1,000, but you'll sell it for $500. So, you know, those are the sorts of things that can be fun. Again, it's not like you have a villa in Italy. It's great if you do. The villa in Italy will sell well. But it's all about matching those items to your crowd, too. So if you've got a Toyota crowd and you're trying to sell a Mercedes, I'll tell you time and again, that Mercedes is going to sell for a Toyota price.
Yes,
expensive
exactly.
Toyota, but it will sell for a Toyota price.
Know who your audience is.
Know your audience, So that's all kind of on that. Well, that kind of actually blends beautifully into the next step here, which is the audience.
Well, lo and behold.
And the segue is, the circle is complete. All right. So with the audience here, the obvious one is, you know, you're going to invite whoever is in your database that has given in the past. Again, we've got lots of different nonprofits listening to this. If they're huge, they've probably segmented their list, and they know who's given $20 and who's giving $500, and they can go with that. But if it's a smaller group, you're going to want to certainly invite people who are have shown support in the past. But beyond that, you're going to invite people you know. Now, one way to fill tables, just kind of a basic, you know, we could do an entire program just on getting the audience through your crowd. But one of those tactics that I like to talk about that I think everyone can wrap their head around is having table captains. If you think about, now again, this would be more for a sit-down dinner gala, but if you think about a traditional sit-down dinner gala, you've got, let's say you want 200 people at that event. That's 20 tables of 10.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get 20 table captains, and that table captain's job is to fill their table, they need to sell the tickets at their table. So if you're selling your tickets for, let's just use round numbers, $100 a person, maybe it's 50, maybe it's 75, maybe it's a 500, I don't know, but we'll just say $100 per person. That's 8 tickets, really, that they need to sell, because chances are your table captain is bringing someone already. So they really just need to make 4 phone calls to fill up those tables, because, again, most people come as part of a couple. So if you can get 20 table captains and they can sell their tables, you're gonna fill up that room for 200 people.
We're going to take a little break here so I can tell you about a new conference that's coming up, sponsored by our friends at Clifton Larson Allen. The National Foundation Conference is designed for CFOs, financial managers, trustees, and other key foundation decision makers. It's set for February 4th to the 6th, 2013 in Las Vegas, and there'll be sessions on mission investing, IT security, HR, tax issues, and more. CPE will be available as well. Now, to find out about the National Foundation Conference, go online to cliftonlarsonallen.com/2013foundation conference or call Shauna at 612-397-3049. Again, that's cliftonlarsonallen.com/2013foundation conference or call Shauna at 612-397-3049. Okay, so we talked about table captains and inviting people you know, going back to your database. Anything else you want to say about audience?
One other tip that I might share here that one of my clients likes to use, and they've got probably 150 to 200 people that they try to target for their event, what they would do is they would have 2 co-chairs. One of those co-chairs was brought in because of her connections with people, you might say, and her job was to fill the room with people. And then the other co-chair's job was to get the items. So she was kind of the auction chair, and the other person was getting the people there to attend.
Gotcha.
And what they would do is the woman who was in charge of getting the people to attend, she put up a big, you know, just a flip chart, a piece of paper flip chart, and she drew the ballroom on the flip chart. And she put the 20 tables or 15, I can't remember how many they were trying to sell, but she put big circles on that flip chart as part of the rendering of the space. And every time that she got a table completely sold and they knew that it was filled, she would write "sold" in big letters across that table. And it was just a reminder to her co-chair that every time the co-chair went in, she's like, look, I'm getting people there. They better have stuff to bid on.
Yes. Well, you know, a visual aid.
Yes.
You know, it's very helpful.
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
It's no different, really, than the thermometers that we've become so accustomed to with the fundraising efforts that people are trying to, you know, reach a certain goal, whether that's for the walkathon where we're supporting our friend or whomever, but they put those Fahrenheit thermometers up there to say, oh, I'm trying to raise $500, looking how close I am. Same sort of a concept.
Okay, and then how about the money, step five here?
Yes, getting the money. So we'll assume then that the event has happened where, you know, that piece is done. So what's happening at the end? You're exhausted, and this is where things start to fall apart rapidly because it's like, oh, I'm done. We made it. You did, but there's in those 2 weeks following the event, after you've gotten the money, you've sold it, you want to make sure that you thank everybody because we are assuming this is not a one-shot-in-the-arm thing, that you're going to probably be repeating this next year or the following year. So to that end, it is important to get your thank yous out quickly. People who spent money deserve to be thanked. So in the wrap-up here, you've collected, you want to send those thank yous out. You know, the research has shown, and you could go online to find this, that very often a first-time donor's gift is not the biggest one. You know, they're not usually writing you into the will at the auction. That's not happening. So what they may be doing is testing you out, though. They're probably willing to spend $100 or $500 as a first gift, but that's what it is. It's a first gift. So we want to start to develop this. Auctions are wonderful donor generation events. They are great at being able to get some money, but also to be able to foster relationships. So let's not let that lag. So sending out thank yous would be at the top of the list. In fact, one of the things you might want to do, not only are you sending your thank yous to the people who spent money, but to the people who donated. So for instance, one of the pieces of advice I like to share is that at your auction, if you're doing a silent auction or a live, chances are you have displays of those items. Go around with your little digital camera or phone, take a picture of every display by itself, print those out, and when you send your thank you to the donor who donated the chocolate basket, include a photo of their display at the auction to show how nicely you displayed it.
Yeah,
you know,
that's nice.
It's a nice touch. You might even include a basic certificate that if they want, they can fill out and display on their wall at their business to show that they're a supporter of your event.
Yes.
You know, that can be things that can go a long ways in making a difference.
It would set your auction apart and your event apart from a lot of others who don't do that kind of follow-up. And, you know, or maybe whoever procured the item has sent a thank you or something, but this is a little more formalized. I really like this. The one thing not to underestimate, I would tell my audience if they're new at this, is do not underestimate the work that's involved after the fact. And this is one piece of it. The other is just making sure all the money cleared, deposits were made. There's some kind of a write-up of what worked and what didn't work and what we're going to do next time. There should be a follow-up meeting. You know, it could take a good 20 to 40 hours for even just a smaller event of time.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Wrap it up easily. And people forget that part. They're so pooped. It's like this, your point about this is a marathon. It really is. And the marathon does not end at the event. It ends by probably about a month after the event. You might finally be done with wrapping things up, giving items back, leftover items, giving them away. There's all kinds of hands-on things that still happen.
Yes. Just like in the marathon or even a shorter race, the runners don't stop 20 yards before the finish line. They don't start to slow down. They book right through the finish line tape, and they run for another probably, I don't know, 50 yards because they're starting to slow down at that point. You're going to kind of be the same way. You're going to blast through that auction, and you're going to still be busy for another, like, I think 2 weeks at least, maybe a month. So don't have the expectation that, you know, you can certainly sleep that weekend, but you're going to get up and be busy on Monday morning with lots to do. And sure enough, that's some of the other things that I had jotted down, Renee, to just reiterate what you'd said. You've got to organize your folders. You've got to get the items to people who, whatever happened, they disappeared that night, and now you have to deliver them somehow or get them to them or follow up, or a credit card didn't work and you need to follow up with that.
Yes.
And you absolutely want to set up a meeting probably within a week or two with your committee to talk about plans for next year or the following year if you're doing one every other year, just so you can capture that and get it into your three-ring binder and know what you really liked and didn't, because your memory will not serve you well when you try to do this the following year. One of the things that I've noticed with my own clients is that I take good notes, and then the following year, if I'm brought into that same client, it may be new volunteers with, you know, two of the ones from before, and the response will be like, oh, I remember when we sold XYZ, and that sold really well. And I'm looking at the data going, no, that did not sell well.
One last thing on the money. Would you say anybody starting this should automatically be prepared to set up credit card payments?
Yeah, I would.
Yes, I would.
Now, it doesn't mean you have to have software. And in fact, the link that I provided earlier, that is a manual checkout process. The difference between, and this area is changing rapidly, but the difference between an event that takes credit cards and not has been documented to be something like a minimum of 25%.
Mm.
So you can easily make 25% more if you're going to take credit cards. The tricky part, and this isn't a conversation on checkout, but I'll provide this insight. The tricky part is that when you're doing checkout at an auction, it's preferable if you can get the credit card information when they walk in the door instead of when they leave.
Yeah.
Because checkout can go more smoothly if that information is gathered when someone walks in to register than if you wait until the end of the night when they're gathering their purchases and leaving. So at the base level, yes, you want to accept credit cards. Before or after, you at least want to accept credit cards. The next step to think about is, do we want to implement the technology that will enable us to take the credit cards up front?
Okay. And again, one of those things is start simply, but just make sure whatever you're doing at this tail end when people are checking it out, you've actually thought it through. You're keeping it simple. Do not make it overly complex at first. I'm hearing you say be practical about some of this stuff, but be smart.
Yeah.
Don't spend, where if you're going to spend your time and you're going to spend energy and effort, spend it on the smart stuff that actually
what
yields financial results, which is the whole point of the event.
Yes. And ladies and gentlemen, take imperfect action. It's better to take a step forward than to take no step at all. So you're going to recognize quickly what worked and what didn't, and what you want to spend more time on next time around. But take at least action. And if it's imperfect, you can course correct. It's like the GPS system in your car. It works a lot better when you're at least moving. If you're just stationary in the car, the GPS has a hard time sometimes figuring out what direction to take you. But as soon as you start to move, it kicks in and says, oh, you need to go right at the next corner. So that's the same sort of attitude to take with your auction.
Very, very good. Well, Sherry Truler of Red Apple Auctions, thanks so much for being on Nonprofit Spark. And give us your website one last time.
Absolutely. It's redappleauctions.com. I have loads of free resources up there to get you started, and certainly some fee-based ones, too, if you decide to go in that direction. But there's some great ways to get started available right there.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Sherry.
Thank you.
Once again, Sherry Truler's website is redappleauctions.com. Now, as I was interviewing Sherry, I remembered a board meeting at which we were talking about adding a live auction to our event. At the time, I was executive director, and I was wishing that there was some auction primer I could give all of us so we could make a decision based on solid experience, not how we felt or what we saw someone else do, just some solid information. Well, this show is that primer, and anyone involved in making decisions about an auction should listen in. In the end, who cares what other organizations do? We need to ask, what makes sense for us, given we're just starting out, or we don't have staff support, or there are a lot more important things for board members and volunteers to do? Now, once again, here are the 5 steps to a great fundraising auction. 1, get help. Don't go it alone. Engage several people in your organization's cause and think of the auction as a jumping off point for future contributions. 2, get structure. Set up committees like decor, procurement, promotion, registration, and checkout, and so on. If you're just starting out, begin small this year and build on what worked for you next year. 3, get items. Take a look at Sherry's book, What Sold Swell in 2012, as a starting point for ideas. Many of the items would make great live auction items. It's not the quantity that matters here, it's the quality. 4. Get an audience. Use your database and have committee and board members add to it with friends, colleagues, family, etc. Consider having tables and table captains to fill a room for a sit-down event. And 5, get the money. Your event doesn't end at the event. Make sure the credit card's clear and payments are accounted for. Deliver items to bidders. Thank donors and bidders for being there. Meet with your committee one last time to review what worked and what didn't work. You'll be grateful you did the next time you run an event. Well, I hope you enjoyed this Back to Auction Basics show. I sure did. Follow me on Twitter at NonprofitSpark, one word, capital N, capital S. And please share the show with your colleagues and friends. I sure would appreciate it. Have a great week.
The staff of WebTalkRadio.net has a recommendation for those of you who are on the board of a nonprofit or work for one. Consider using a Nonprofit Spark show as a starting point for a great discussion about strategic planning, finances, fundraising, and more. All past shows are available in the archives. They offer a tremendous learning resource that you can access at your convenience. To learn more about Renee and her work, please visit her website at sparkplugconsulting.com. Or you can click on the globe on the screen in front of you. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again next week for another edition of Nonprofit Spark.